All righty, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast, which is part of the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network and in partnership with Old Man Squad Sports. I'm your host, as always, Noah Rubin. This is episode 81, and today we're going to switch things up a little bit. We're not going to talk about Dynasty Fantasy Basketball, but we're still going to talk about fantasy sports. We're actually going to talk about the history of fantasy sports with the author, Larry Schechter. Let's go ahead and get into it. And let's go ahead and get into it. I'm going to go ahead and bring Larry in. Larry wrote the book. It's been 4 or 6 months that it's been out. I'm not sure exactly when it came out. How long has the book been out, Larry?
Almost 7 months now. It was early May.
Okay, nice. And if you can just tell me a little bit about how the overall experience has been for you over the past 7 months since the book's release.
Well, you know, I'm going to go back. If it's okay with you, I'm going to go back
Absolutely.
To like more than 2 years ago. Perfect. When I, you know, because it really starts, I had the idea, I've had this idea for a long time to write a book about the history of fantasy sports because nobody's done it. You know, I look around at fantasy sports. I've been playing for 30 years and it used to be very few people even knew what fantasy sports was. And you would have to, you know, get the statistics out of the newspaper and do it by hand. And now, you know, here we are in 2024, you got millions and millions and millions of people playing everything from fantasy football and fantasy basketball to fantasy Iditarod, fantasy wakeboarding. You got more than 50 million adults in the U.S. playing fantasy sports. We don't know how many under 18 there are, but there are lots of under 18 also playing fantasy sports. You got 200 million people playing fantasy cricket in India. You got news services, stat services, Sirius XM radio, 24/7 fantasy channel. You got podcasts like we're doing right now. I mean, it's unbelievable what's happened. So I would just look around and go, how did this happen? You know, people had ideas for games years ago. How did we get to where we are now? And nobody has ever written a book like this. It's like nobody knows how this all happened. So I got the idea. I mean, I've had the idea for several years, but a little over 2 years ago, I decided I'm going to do it. And I thought it was something I could knock out in like 3 or 4 months, which turned out to be crazy. It took 18 months of full-time work, research, interviewing dozens and dozens of people, and writing. And then since the release, it's still like a full-time job for me, just getting the word out. Because I think everybody, the book turned out incredible, and not because I did something brilliant, but the stories that I learned were amazing. What happened is my original idea was write the history of fantasy sports. Who did what, when, how did it all happen? But I realized very early on, I was learning fascinating stories about what people did. Some of them were inspirational, some were funny, a few will bring a tear to your eye. Just all this amazing stuff. And so I realized if I just write the history of fantasy sports, I'll get the job done, but it'll come off like a very boring research paper, which I wouldn't even want to read most of it myself. But I'm using the stories of the people. So I'm telling the history, but with this, all these stories, it makes it really interesting. And I'm not just saying that myself. I'm based on the feedback. The reviews are amazing. People are saying it's fascinating. People who've been in the industry or played fantasy sports their whole life, you know, they don't even know most of this stuff. So it's been a lot of work though, but I want to get the word out. Everybody who likes fantasy sports needs to read this book. You'll love it, especially if anybody's in the industry, especially. And now we're in this December, it's a great Christmas gift. You know, it's either buy the book or put it on your holiday gift list, wish list. You know, or buy it for all your league mates.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned, I mean, it originally started off kind of like just the general history of it, but then you kind of converted to the stories. And I think, you know, it is on the cover, it's and the stories of the people who made it happen. And honestly, for me, like that's what got me into journalism and kind of where I am right now is the opportunity to tell stories and read stories. Like that's what I find interesting about sports, about, you know, every other interest I have is, you know, who can tell the best story, what makes the story unique. So that really appealed to me as I was reading the book. Cause like you said, when I started reading, I was like, okay, the history of fantasy sports, it's just going to be, you know, all the things that happened, but the stories of each individual and how it all came together to be what it is today, I thought was fascinating. And you said it can be for anyone. Cause I was listening to your interview with Jeff Erickson, which I think was about 6 months ago. And it's interesting because like you were interviewing him for the book, I guess before that. And as for me, like most of the stuff I read in this, I hadn't heard of because I've only been seriously playing fantasy sports for 4 or 5 years. And really only kind of in the industry or understanding what the industry looks like for about the past 3 years. And it was still incredibly appealing to me. And so like, even as someone who didn't experience all these things, I really enjoyed every single story.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I was going to mention, I think I forgot to say this, that lots of people who've never played fantasy sports have really liked the book because it's not so much about fantasy sports. It's not about strategy or formats or anything like that at all. And it's more about the stories of the people who did it and what they did. It's also a lot about the cultural phenomenon that fantasy mm-hmm. sports has become, where it brings people together, like unbelievably, coworkers, parents and children, their college friends or high school friends who would have probably drifted apart over the years, but they have some kind of fantasy league and they're still playing it 30, 40, 50 years later. Now their wives know each other. It's amazing. The Midwest Book Review, their review said fascinating from start to finish. And that was written by someone who's never played fantasy sports before. You know, a lot of people have really liked it who never even played fantasy sports. And when I started writing the book, you know, originally my idea was the title was The History of Fantasy Sports. But then, you know, as I was saying before, once I started to learn these stories, that's where I got the subtitle from, you know, and the stories of the people who made it happen.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the questions I actually have for you might be a little different from other people because I have interest in writing a book at some point in my life. I think that'd be very cool. My brother's done it. So it's like something that I just kind of have on my bucket list a little bit. So I know this wasn't your first book and we'll focus more on this one than your first one, but what made you, whether it was for the first one or this one, say like, I want to write a book? And like, obviously you have plenty of interest in fantasy sports and you said you've been doing that for 30 years. So that's fair as a topic, but what made you think like, I want to do this, or even like I can do this?
Well, I was and am regarded as one of the best fantasy baseball players. You know, I've been in labor and Tout Wars, the two big experts leagues. And I wrote a book 2014 called Winning Fantasy Baseball, where I just divulge all my strategy about fantasy baseball from beginning to end. And I don't even remember right now what my motivation was to do that, but I just decided to do it. And so that was in 2014. That book is completely different. I mean, that was about my strategy for fantasy baseball. It's not something, you know, people would want to read unless they're playing fantasy baseball, though some of it applies to other sports. So if you're into fantasy football, fantasy basketball, you could read that and see a lot of it does apply. But anyway, I mean, so this book now, The History of Fantasy Sports, is completely different, not about me or my opinions. The motivation after I wrote Winning Fantasy Baseball, which was in 2014, sometimes I would ask myself, you know, do I have any other ideas for a book? And the only idea I ever had that was any good was this one, The History of Fantasy Sports. So I've actually had this idea for several years and finally got around to doing it a little over 2 years ago.
Yeah. And, you know, okay, so you have your idea. You're saying, okay, I'm going to do it about 2 years ago. Where do you start? Like, what's the first thing that you kind of did? Was it set like an outline or just start getting in interviews or what'd you have to do?
Well, I thought about some of the topics that would be included. The book covers everything from beginning to end. It's like there are precursors to fantasy sports. Some of them go back even to the 1800s, if you want to count like tabletop games. Then it goes through like Catico All-Star Baseball game. APA and Stratomatic were very big. And then the book starts with those, and then it goes to how fantasy baseball was created and spread, how fantasy football was created and spread, the first commercial games, newspaper games, the first radio shows, the first publications, stat services, you know, everything through, you know, the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, all the legal issues, through a little bit more modern times like daily fantasy sports and worldwide expansion. And so it covers everything. So when I started, I kind of just started researching. I wasn't sure how it was all going to be done. But I kind of started with, you know, I think like Dan Okrent in fantasy baseball was one of the first things that I started looking into. And there's a myth that, you know, Dan Okrent is the guy who's primarily credited with inventing fantasy baseball. Mm-hmm. But there's a myth that he magically came up with the idea on a plane ride from Connecticut to Texas. And that is not true at all. There's a whole lot more to the story. He didn't magically come up with the idea on the plane ride. It actually goes back years ago. So, you know, that was one of the first topics I looked into. I interviewed Dan Okrent. I interviewed like dozens and dozens of people. I did just Googled article after article after article. You know, like one that comes to mind is, you know, after fantasy baseball, the next thing I looked at is how did fantasy football start? And fantasy football, the first league was in 1963. A guy named Bill Winkenbach in Oakland started it with a couple of friends. But they kept it to themselves. But one of the guys in that league was named Andy Mussolimus, and he owned a bar in Oakland. And mm-hmm. a year or two later, after they started the league, he thought it might be a nice thing to offer to his patrons and it would be good for business. So he offered it to his patrons and they started a league. And the next year there was demand. They had a second league and then a third league and then a league only for women, because women wanted to play and the men didn't want to play in the league with the women back then. And so Mussolimus is the guy who really is credited with spreading fantasy football, because he started this league and then another league. People would come into the bar. They said, what are these people doing? There's a lot of word of mouth. And he's the one who really started spreading it. And then, you know, within a couple of years or whatever, he'd get calls from bars all over the country saying, you know, I heard about this fantasy football thing you're doing. Can you explain how that works? And then these bars in other places would do it. Now, what I'm getting to with Mussolimus, though, is when I found out about him, you know, I would Google article after article after article, anything to do with Mussolimus. And, you know, to the point where, like, I've read 20, 25 articles, and I'm reading all the same stuff over and over again, except every so often, you know, one little new tidbit is thrown in, which is interesting. And so with Mussolimus, I'm at like 20, 25 articles, and all of a sudden I see something that had never been mentioned before, which like floored me. The guy was a war hero. He was a bona fide frickin' war hero. When he was 17, Pearl Harbor happened, and he signed up to enlist. The recruiter said 97% of you are not going to return alive, but he signed up anyway. He went behind enemy lines. They gave him the cyanide pill, so if he got caught by the Germans, he could kill himself. But obviously, he survived. And he later, like years later, when he was like 90 or something, he went to Washington to get the gold medal or some big congressional award. He was, you know, one of the few people still living. And his whole mission had been kept secret for years and years and years.
Yeah, I remember, like, as you were saying, that kind of came back to me because I do have my copy right here of the book, just like that story a little bit. So that was very interesting. But I found myself, as I was reading this book, getting inspired. And I think it's, you know, it's what makes it very appealing to any sort of fantasy content creator, writer, podcaster, or anybody else that just wants to kind of apply it. Because I remember after reading his story, because not the war hero aspect, but the fact that he had fantasy sports being ran out of his bar, I texted a few of my friends and said, hey guys, like let's have a sports bar one day. Like, let's do it. Because I was reading the idea. I was like, that's so cool just to have like live fantasy drafts in your bar. And like, you can just have your teams on the game. So that was inspiring to me. And, you know, while that idea is probably going to be tabled for a while, but as I was continuing to read the book, you know, about the news publications that were starting and the first podcast and all the other things we talked about, I was getting inspired each time I read the book, which, you know, sometimes I would just read a chapter and like right before I was going to be writing an article or something like that, just kind of give me a little motivation, just make me feel like it was going to lead to something big, just like it was for all these people in this book. And you're talking about getting, you know, interviews with, you know, you said dozens and dozens of interviews. Were there any interviews that were just particularly difficult to get? Like it was very hard to get in touch with somebody, whether it be just because they're hard to get in touch with or they were just hard to find?
Well, Andy Muslimus, for example, is dead. So it's impossible to get good again. But, you know, but I tracked down one of his grandkids on Facebook. Like, you know, some of the people were not too hard to get. Some of them I had to do a lot of digging. Yeah, but actually, I see Muslimus, that's kind of an unusual name. Like if if you're looking on Facebook for somebody named John Smith, you got a million of them. But, you know, Muslimus. So I actually tracked down a couple of his grandchildren, got a hold of them. And one of them, I did an interview with one of them, and he gave me a little bit of insight into some things that I hadn't learned before. There were a few people I couldn't get. You know, I couldn't get their contact information. I tried to contact them, never heard back. So there were some, I got a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Yeah, my bibliography, the book is like something like 280 pages, and then the bibliography is like 30 or 40 pages. It's a huge bibliography.
Yeah, which was, you know, very cool to see that included, because after I was reading it, when I would see, you know, names pop up on Twitter, it's like, that name is very familiar. So I would just go to the bibliography and try and figure out which chapter they're in. So that was actually very helpful for me a few times. Like I said, I have the book right here, looking at the cover and everything. Did you work with a publishing company to get this book put out?
Well, I self-published it.
Okay. So that's what I was curious about.
Yeah. My first book, I worked with a publishing company. This one, I self-published it. It's a lot easier to do now than it was 10 years ago. So I hired a, you know, professional editor, cover design, et cetera. But I self-published it.
Was that, I guess, like a good experience for you? Was that something you would do again, or was it easier to work with a publishing company?
Well, it's easier to work with a publishing company, but also you lose control over some things. Mm-hmm. And it's also, a lot more expensive to do it that way.
Oh, I'm sure. No, that makes sense. So that was probably not something that anybody else is going to care about except for me, but I was very, very, very interested by that. So I guess, how did writing this book and doing all the research behind it did it alter your perspective on fantasy sports at all?
It didn't, you know, answering your question, the answer to your question is, it really made me realize how amazing fantasy sports are. The whole thing I said before about bringing people together, you know, that's not something I was looking for, but it just kept coming through so clearly all the time, about, you know, coworkers. You got like a company where you have like, say, salespeople and tech people. Ordinarily, they would never interact with each other, but they're in some kind of fantasy league, so they're interacting with each other. You got a fantasy football draft in Vegas where you have a plumber sitting next to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. They're talking like they're best buddies. One of the guys I interviewed was Mark Mariani, who was with CBS Sports and Turner Sports. And he said when he first got a job in the sports department, he had never heard of fantasy football, but they had a league. They invited him to play. And he said when he heard all the details, he realized he was in Chicago. He realized, if I join this league, I can call my boss's 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 boss in the fancy office in Manhattan, and he'll talk to me about a trade or whatever. Whereas ordinarily, this guy wouldn't take his call in a million years. So he joined the league. You know, and you got parents and children, you know, it just brings people together. And it's, as I said, it's a cultural phenomenon. You know, and fantasy sports are great. That's, you know, the thing that, you know, my conclusion. Because what happened is I wrote the book. I was done, submitted it to my editor. I did not have an epilogue. My editor read the, you know, he read it and he had some suggestions. One of his suggestions was you should have an epilogue. Doesn't need to be long, just something to kind of, you know, recap and tie it all together. And I thought, all right, that's a good idea. I should do that. And I started thinking about, okay, what am I going to write for the epilogue? And, you know, that was kind of like the thing that came through to me is this, what, you know, what I've learned, fantasy sports are freaking great. And it brings people together. That was one of the biggest things, you know, in the epilogue. And another thing that happened in the epilogue, which, you know, the book is, it's stories of entrepreneurs who created this industry. And the thing that they pretty much had in common was they saw a need for something that didn't exist. Like Ian Allen, of Fantasy Football Index Magazine, and his partner, Bruce Taylor, they were college students. And they had played fantasy football for a year. And they're like, this is great, but like, there's no information available. Let's start a magazine. And there were other people, you know, so when computers came out, they're like, geez, you know, with computer, we could use statistics for fantasy sports instead of having to do it by hand. So people saw a need for something that didn't exist, or it existed, but they thought they could do it better, and created all these different things for the industry. And it's, you know, still happening today, like, you know, more modern times, you know, daily fantasy sports was created by somebody. And when I wrote the epilogue, when I was thinking about, you know, what to write for the epilogue, it occurred to me, I just did what all these people did. I saw a need for something that didn't exist, which is telling the history of fantasy sports, and I did it. And when I realized that, that's kind of cool. I was like, oh my God, I just did what these guys did. This thing didn't exist, and I just created it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, in the book goes through the very beginning, which is something that, like you said, it filled kind of a need. Like, there was sports fans and, you know, people that had an interest in fantasy sports once they figured out what it was, all the way through podcasts, news articles, professional leagues, and then into DFS, like you mentioned, and going entirely international and all the places that people play around the world. What was your favorite chapter to write, or what was the most interesting chapter for you, whether it was during the writing process or during interviews?
There was no favorite chapter. There was just lots of great stuff. I mean, I'll tell you that I can answer the opposite. I can say, like, probably the least favorite was, like, all the, you know, the legal issues. Mm. Although even then, you got some really interesting stuff and some funny stuff even. Yeah. But, you know, one thing I'm just going to throw in randomly here, because I know your basketball podcast. So I got to pull it up here on my screen. Where is it? I want to read just a little quick story, because this is a basketball podcast. So Paul Charchian, some people may have heard of Paul Charchian. He's done a lot in the industry, and he started the first weekly magazine. And he started it in Minnesota in 94. And he had, when he started the magazine, he had his apartment listed as, you know, the contact place for the magazine if somebody wanted to subscribe or whatever. So I'm gonna kind of read this story from the book. But one day in 1994, there's a knock on Charchian's door. A man said, "Hi, my name's Rick. I love your magazine. I was going to subscribe and realized we're in the same building. I live downstairs." Rick also begged for a job. He said, "I'll work for free. I just want to be part of this." They were able to give Rick a part-time job with nominal pay and were eventually able to offer him a full-time position. Rick quit his job at American Express, where he was working a corporate job that he hated, and he took a pay cut to go full-time. He wrote for them for many years, articles with analysis, advice, and predictions for both fantasy football and later fantasy basketball. It was the basketball articles that led Rick, whose last name is Kamla, he being discovered by NBA TV, where he was offered a job in 2003 as one of the first people on television talking about fantasy basketball. And he's been there ever since, becoming a studio commentator and calling hundreds of NBA games play-by-play. He's also been a radio talk show host on 92.9 in Atlanta, as well as SiriusXM.
Yeah. And now Rick is doing Sports Ethos podcasting with Aaron Brewski and Dr. A, who also, if you're looking for more stories about the history of fantasy, Doc has plenty of them. So he'd be a great person to talk to about that as well. But yeah, that's a fascinating story about Rick. So I remember reading that one distinctly. And I'm sure you wrote it this way intentionally for it to just be, oh, this guy named Rick. And then a few paragraphs later, oh yeah, it's Rick Kamla, by the way. And it's like, oh, I know that guy. Yeah.
No, yeah. Yep. That's why I wrote that way.
No, that was enjoyable for sure. Did you have, I know this is just another question about random favorite things, and maybe you don't have a favorite one as well, but like through the interviews, a favorite fact that you learned that you didn't have any idea about, that it was like, you weren't even intending to find it. And it was as you were interviewing people, they just kind of threw it out there. And you're like, that's very fascinating.
Well, again, there are lots of them, but if I had to pick one, I mean, 200 million people playing fantasy cricket in India. I mean, that's absurd.
Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't even know that was, it makes sense that it's offered in India.
The biggest cricket company in India called Dream 11, they're worth $8 billion.
Yeah. That's not too bad. So I know you have a lot of history playing fantasy baseball and in some of the professional leagues. How many leagues are you in?
Well, typically I'm in about 5 to 7 baseball and 5 to 7 football, but this year is the first time in 30 years or so, I'm not playing season-long fantasy football because I was just so busy working on trying to promote the book. I just didn't have time to do my normal preparation. So I took the year off, which really sucks. I'll be back at it next year, though.
Yeah. And as far as the professional baseball leagues, can you just kind of give everybody a little bit of a resume with kind of your championship pedigree with what you have with fantasy baseball?
I won Tout Wars 6 times and Labor 3 times. If those are the two well-known experts leagues, Labor is sponsored by USA Today. And by the way, there's a chapter in the book about experts leagues. Mm-hmm. It covers Labor, Tout Wars, Scott Fishbowl, Justin Mason's Fantasy Baseball Invitational, a couple of other things. FanX is a football experts league. Let's see. And I won the CDM National Baseball Challenge. I won in 2002, 2005. There were like 6,000 teams one year and 7,500 teams another year. So that's the highlights of my resume.
Yeah. See, that absolutely makes you qualified to write a book called Winning Fantasy Baseball. And then obviously gives you a unique perspective when writing about the history of fantasy sports. This is the second year doing a experts professional fantasy basketball league. It's just a bunch of analysts called Industry Pickup. So it's still young. But we've got a few of those going this year, which hopefully will be able to eventually get to the point where it's kind of recognized in the same way that like Tout Wars is in some of the other professional leagues as well. So hopefully we are able to get to that.
Since this is basketball, I can tell you about my basketball career if you want.
That'd be great. I wasn't sure how much
When I was in junior high school in eighth grade, there was one day I had a fever, and my parents were telling me, not to go to the game. I didn't go to school that day, but I wanted to play in the basketball game. So I went with a fever, and I had my career high, 5 points.
Ooh.
And then the next year I went off to high school, and I was nowhere near good enough to get on that team.
So that's
but when you said pickup, I thought of it. Like we had great pickup games. I'm going to work this back to the book We had great pickup games in my backyard for basketball, we also played wiffle ball there. And Peter Schenke of RotoWire, who's in my extensively mentioned in my book, mm-hmm. he played wiffle ball as a kid, and he kept his statistics for wiffle ball. His entire wiffle ball, he can tell you his lifetime batting average in wiffle ball.
That's incredibly fascinating.
Yes, that's unusual. I don't think there are too many people that could tell you that.
Yeah, but I think that also just that makes sense that he worked in fantasy sports and then eventually was a big name in fantasy sports if you're taking your own stats in a backyard with football game.
Yep. Yep. Long before he ever heard of fantasy sports.
Yeah, that's for me, like, I wasn't playing fantasy sports when I was in elementary, middle, high school even, which I don't think, I mean, I think it's getting more to a point where high schoolers are playing, but just as like a fan of basketball, I would, when I was in elementary and middle school, like wake up in the morning, the first thing I would do is go grab my parents' laptop and go on ESPN and scroll through all the box scores and just like look at all of the numbers from the night before just to keep up with everything. And so I think it's kind of cool that like the people that end up being really addicted to fantasy sports were kind of always a little bit of a nerd with some of the numbers, whether it being their own wiffle ball games or just trying to keep up with some of the pro sports. So I think you can definitely kind of look back and see kind of the signs that, oh, this person, you know, it makes sense that they ended up doing this for a living.
Yeah. And there are lots of teenagers and kids mm-hmm. that play fantasy sports. There's one story in the book is about this kid. He was 9 years old. He was 2 months before his 10th birthday, and he wanted to play in his dad's fantasy football league. And he needed to earn, I feel like, $100 or $150 or something for the entry fee. So he wanted to get a paper route to earn the money to join the league. And the local newspaper company had a rule: you had to be 10 years old to get a paper route. His parents lied to the paper company and told them he was 10 years old. So he got the paper route, earned the money, and he ended up winning the league. He beat this 10-year-old, beat 23 adults to win the league.
That's awesome. And the fact that it was sponsored by faked age just to be able to say you're 10 years old, just to be able to beat a bunch of adults. I'm sure that didn't feel very good for the 23 adults that were playing in that league and lost to the 9-year-old.
Right. Right. And then there's another guy was like 6 years old when he started. His dad was in a fantasy football league. They had a kids division for some of their kids wanted mm-hmm. to play. So he started playing when he was six.
Yeah. And that's probably not too many 6 year olds out here playing fantasy sports, but hey, if they want to keep up with it and they continue to do it, they can do pretty great things because of the people that you wrote about in your book that have kind of laid the foundation for the people that are doing it today, which is, again, was very fascinating for me to kind of learn about some of the backstories of the names that I had seen and heard of that I didn't really know much about other than, hey, they're kind of people that have names in fantasy. And then also kind of the backstory of some of the companies. You know, I write for Roto World, but also learning about RotoWire and some of the other fantasy, you know, the bigger ones like Yahoo, ESPN, like those big names as well, like kind of learning the backstory of how those companies used fantasy sports or, you know, rejected fantasy sports initially for a lot of them. And then eventually once it was kind of like, oh, the numbers actually say that this thing is going to make us money. Yeah, sure. Now you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Roto World, the whole story of Roto World and RotoWire is in there about how that all started. And, you know, Matthew Paulette from Roto mm-hmm. World, you know, he's one of the people I interviewed. I interviewed the founders of Roto World, Rich Pike and Michael Livtow. Interesting story how that, you know, they actually started a stat service. Mike and Rich started All Star Stats. It was one of the first statistics services, mm-hmm. and that ended up becoming NBC Sports fantasy department, basically. You know, All-Star Stats led into Roto World, which then got sold to NBC. You know, the whole thing got sold to NBC. Yeah. And they tried to do a deal with RotoWire, and RotoWire wasn't interested. And that's why they started RotoWorld.
Yeah. And also, I guess, you know, the name Roto is obviously coming from Rotisserie, but it's obviously led to a lot of different names because it was Roto News even before like RotoWire was a thing.
Right.
It was also the, kind of the backstory there.
Yep.
Sweet. Well, Larry, where can we find your book? I know, you know, I was able to find it off Amazon, but is there anywhere else that we're able to get it?
Well, it's available on most booksellers' websites. It's on there, paperback and ebook. Amazon, it's definitely on Amazon. And if you want to look at reviews or more details, Amazon has by far the most reviews and details.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I will recommend this book, gave it 5 stars on Goodreads because I really enjoyed it. It was very inspiring for me. So I'm sure I'm not alone in saying this, but Larry, thank you for actually putting all this together. It made, again, an enjoyable read, but also an inspiring one for me. I was able to learn a lot that I didn't know about the industry and just kind of generally how things would work, but also kind of the history and the specific stories were all incredibly enjoyable for me to read. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I said to everyone listening, I would recommend the book. Larry told you where you can find it. We will post the link to Amazon probably in the description so you get that. You can also follow Larry on Twitter at Larry Schechter. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast. And I will see you guys next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.